Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Chris Stamey, whose new album, Modernism, is out June 19th. It's a collection of favorites of songs taken from the pages of the Kinks, Beatles, Rolling Stones, and Left Bank songbooks, as well as a smattering of earlier Stamey compositions, which receive a new life on the collection. Some of the collaborators who appear on the LP are John Worster of the Mountain Goats, as well as the late Alex Chilton and the ever-youthful Jody Stevens, both of Big Star. He's also joined by his longtime bandmates in the DBs for a version of the King's classic Waterloo Sunset. Stamey recently spoke about the making of the album, the impressive range of collaborators he surrounded himself with across the decades, and his future plans. That's Chris Stamey on Into Music, coming up now. I love this album. What inspired you to do a collection of, you know, other people's songs at this point?
Well, I was thinking about how fun it used to be to record when I was in high school and, you know, a couple of big bottles of Coca-Cola, cheddar cheese sandwich, and we were off, and just kind of delving into our heroes of the time. How did Cream make those noises or the move? And then I was pulled aside by my own music and have generally followed that. I'd cut a version of the Kinks classic Waterloo Sunset with the DBs, and it was just sitting in the tape locker. We'd never really done anything with it. So when I finished that up, I thought, well, what might go with it? And I realized I had a few other tracks and went in and in one day recorded 12 more. So it was a project that seemed to want to happen, but I can't say there was a lot of thought behind it. I love it though. I think maybe because it surprised me or snuck up on me, it's particularly fun for me to listen to.
Yeah. There's a real spirit to it. And I think, you know, as often is the case, sequencing is a big part. And I love that you kick it off with Hey Bulldog, which is just one of my favorite Beatles tunes. It's an outlier for them in some ways, you know?
Yeah, I guess they went in the studio to make a video for a song for the cartoon Beatles movie. And then Lennon said, well, no, let's just record this one instead. And for a long time, there was a video of them making it in the studio that had other music on it. I think it was Yellow Submarine. And then somebody figured that you could lock the actual released recording to the video. And it's fascinating. It's on YouTube and you can see them actually working out all the parts and recording it as it happened. You know, it's cinema verite or Beatles verite. But I love the song too. And it had a lot to do with Jody Stevens being in town. And, you know, he's just got this sound. I mean, people talk about Keith Richards or John Coltrane or, you know, people who have distinctive sounds, and Jody is totally in there with them.
For sure. Yeah. And you two have worked together quite a lot, especially with the Big Star third and so forth.
We have. I mean, we've been playing in a related thing called the Big Star Quintet, which is really fun. In fact, I'll be leaving to meet him in Ireland in a few days for a few more shows. And, you know, it's like a repertory company. We love those songs and the audience loves hearing them. And we, I mean, there was the Pet Sounds Band with Brian Wilson, who showed what can happen if you put a lot of care and detail into playing versions of records that people love live. Maybe the Fab, or what do they call it? The Fab Faux in New York. Also, but We try to be careful with it. Jody, of course, sounds exactly like Jody, and it's really fun.
Not to dwell on that but too much, but it's amazing to me that they reemerged, what, 93 as Big Star. I'm sure nobody thought that would happen, and now all these years later, that music continues to thrive and seems to grow, seems to find new audiences all the time.
I mean, if you know, in 100 years or maybe in 20 years, people are going to look at Alex Chilton's life and think, what? Did this actually happen? I mean, it's a strange progression, you know, but that was Alex.
And he makes an appearance on the album.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That, speaking of, yeah, that was, I'd recorded a version of Ruby Tuesday with Alex producing and playing in, I guess, 1977, and it never came out, and the tapes have been lost. But I did have a little work reel I'd taken home that had the instrumental track, and I transferred it and recut the vocals with Pat Sansone from Wilco, and it's meaningful to me. I like hearing Alex on drums, and I remember again, it was fun. It's a sad song, but it was a fun time in my life.
Do you have like a personal like tape archive someplace of the stuff that you've done, or have they all been kind of scattered to various corners because of record deals and so forth?
I have a lot of tapes, but unfortunately, they were stored in discarded boxes from the grocery store. So a lot of them have enjoyed a healthy growth of mold over the years. There are now some techniques to get rid of that, but I wasn't the best archivist. I mean, I kept them, but I didn't take care of them. I mean, I have, when it hit hard drives, my closet's really filled up. Even though they're smaller, I have a vast collection of digital stuff. But I have most of my masters from throughout my life. It's just that most of them are really gross. I mean, with mold.
Yes.
And of course, you mentioned having your good friends in the DBs, your band, on Waterloo Sunset, and you guys too. I feel like the DBs are another band that seems to pick up new fans as time goes on and more people discover them.
Could be. I don't know. I mean, you know, music and fame have never really been joined at the hip. I mean, I'm not sure how famous Bach was in his day. I mean, there are a lot of, I mean, if you write music, that's a big reward. If you write music you like, and, you know, to some degree, everything else is gravy. But I'm glad that people are finding the DBs record, sure. I mean, actually, the DBs have a live record that came out for Record Store Day. And there's another version, not that much could be fit on one slab of vinyl, but there, I think there's a 22-song version that will come out eventually from a tour we did in, I think, 2024, maybe. And, you know, there's some really good stuff on that. So the band, the four of us can still play together and find something.
Yeah, I caught that tour in St. Paul, and I was going to go see another show the next night, and I really mean this. Your show was so incredible, I thought, I just have to savor this. I'm not going to this other show.
Wow. Well, thank you. I'm trying to remember St. Paul, but I think all the shows were pretty good, so I will accept the compliment. Thank you.
Now, a kind of secret favorite of mine here is Hernando's Hideaway. I've loved that record since I was a child.
Oh, me too, man. It's one of those records that just seems like the Martians are trying to communicate with us. I mean, it's so weird. I mean, it's from Pajama Game, but then Archie Blair covered it, you know, featuring a castanets player. And but the thing you got to realize about Hernando's Hideaway, besides the fact that it's a tango and it's, you know, a really cool record, is that I think it was at a pivot point because he had a big hit, and I think some of that money must have gone into Cadence. And, you know, he signed the Everly Brothers, who were just like a kid act, and produced them and had all those Everly Brothers hits that then somehow, you know, people in Liverpool heard and took that notion of harmony. And so, you know, the late 60s guitar pop music might have been really different without Hernando's Hideaway as a hit. That's my theory.
Yeah, what an interesting time, right? When people would like have, they'd sort of like reinvest in the industry and kind of try to bring up younger artists, right?
Yeah, I don't know that much about the details about how. I mean, I'm trying to think. It seems like Archie had a had some more middle of the road things going on, and I think he put out Rumble by Link Wray, if memory serves, although I've read that he didn't actually like it, but he was talked into putting it out.
Well, I'm glad he did.
Yeah, no kidding. I hope I've got that right. I don't want you to get letters.
Well, and then Sly and the Family Stone. I was not ready for just the full-on assault of that tune. And just how funky it came across on this record.
Oh, cool. Well, I mean, I really think if my sessions for this record had been moved 2 days, we would have cut all different songs, but I really like that one. And it was just, again, I think the term is Busman's Holiday, but you know, that was a great song. And I also like, you know, I would like to be thanked. I would like to thank everyone for letting me be myself, you know.
When did you kind of become acquainted with Sly Stone? Were you like from the beginning, or was it something that, you know, happened later in terms of his music?
Oh, on the radio in the 60s. I mean, I was a kid in the 60s, and when you know, radio, even top 40 radio was very Catholic in the lower C sense.
Well, like you were saying, you know, this record partially inspired you, like getting together with friends with your Cokes and sandwiches and stuff. There's something great about when you're young and discovering music like that, right? And it's just, you can be open to so much.
Right. I mean, I try to stay open. It's harder, you know, it's the curse of being somewhat expert at something. Hear something and you hear it in terms of what you've heard before. And, you know, in general in life, that's also the problem. I mean, but, it, you know, sometimes in the studio, I mean, someone will say, well, let's put this guitar through a Leslie. And I'll groan inwardly and thinking, you know, okay, but that has kind of been done. And then I'll find out what they actually mean is a sound I've never thought of. So, working in the studio, particularly with people who haven't made a lot of records, is a good way to remember that I know a lot less than I think I do.
Yeah, interesting. Kind of keeping that, I've heard it referred to as, you know, thinking like a novice, getting in touch with your novice.
Beginner's mind.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, well, I also wanted to ask you about Where the Fun Is, which is the second to last song on the album. Again, this sequence is just kills me. And then we go into, you know, or I guess Where the Fun Is a little bit earlier than that. And then we go into Let's Get Lost. But yeah,
I usually sequence by keys, you know, just, I mean, in a symphony, you'd have certain key relationships between the sections and even in the individual movements, if it's modulating. And so I'm glad you like the sequence. There are other things involved, but for me, it's a lot about what key centers you're moving to. But that's something that generally we are not aware of. We don't think in that way when we're listening to a record, but it's a powerful part of it. But you're talking about Where the Fun Is. Yeah, I recorded that song, I think, a fourth higher, way in the squeaky range. And when I happened to hear it, you know, at some point last year, I realized that the chord changes were really not that different than what I was writing now. And I thought it kind of would be cool to, you know, readdress it. And it, you know, it's a pretty different version from that old version.
Well, you also have this single out with Caitlin Carey, The New Colossus.
Yes, that was done after this record. I mean, I like Woody Guthrie, and I thought, well, you know, there's a lot going on in the country about immigration and what's right and wrong, and I don't know, I just thought I could sing the plaque on the Statue of Liberty. That's about as far as it went. I mean, I just wrote that song, and a day later got together with Caitlin and we recorded it, and it was done.
You have this knack, I think, of once you've collaborated with people, it seems like there's a lot of, and I mean this in a good way, kind of repeat business that you continue to collaborate with them over the time, that somehow there must be friendships formed in that process as well.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, records can be stressful. You know, I love musicians. I mean, good musicians, just I want to get back to them. I guess that's right. Yeah. I mean, I've been doing a lot of stuff with folks like Pat Sansone is really great. And also, he's a producer. So, and he's rarely in Chapel Hill, but he'll do something for me remotely and we'll go back and forth on the phone and he'll do something great. And so that's like a magic box. I can push the, you know, or the Lemon Twigs have done a bunch of things for me and I know that they're going to deliver if they have the time to actually address it. And so, I like keeping the community going, but these people are of high caliber.
Well, Chris, I wish you all the best with this album and everything that's going on. And I'm sure we'll talk again with, you know, whatever you do next, whether it's another collection of kind of paper songs or...
I mean, I'm in the middle of a new record. I can't decide. I might call it I Dream of Paris after that song that's on it. I'm also thinking of Tunesmith, which is kind of an oblique reference to the Jimmy Webb autobiography, but by the time you get it, the title will probably have changed. But I'm excited about it. So I would love to have it finished by the fall, but the way things go, you never actually make your release date. So I don't know.
It's kind of like due dates in school, right? It's like
or taxes.
Yeah, or taxes. All right, you take care. Thanks again.
Okay, thank you so much.
You've been listening to a conversation with Chris Stamey. His latest album, Modernism, is out June 19th via Flatiron Recordings. You can learn more about it at chrisstameyflatiron.bandcamp.com/album/modernism, as well as at chrisstamey.com. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org and find all the latest programming notes on that website as well. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time. And as always, we like to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torin Anderson.